And welcome back. The recent attack against a woman in a South St. Louis Bosnian neighborhood is being looked at as a hate or bias crime. Hate crime is a special category for violent crime committed against people because of their social status, including race, religion, or sexual orientation. Hate crimes are something no community can condone. But we'll be talking about hate crime in this segment with Karen Oresti, the regional director for the Anti-Defamation League for Missouri and Southern Illinois, Imam Muhammad Hasic of the Islamic Community Center, and board president of the Interfaith Partnership of Greater St. Louis. A.J. Bockelman is executive director of PROMO, a statewide organization advocating for LGBT or lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equality. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Good morning.
Karen, let me begin with you. The St. Louis Police Department is reluctant, apparently, to call what happened on the South Side a hate crime. They refer to it as a bias crime. What's the difference?
From my perspective, it's going to depend on what the facts bear out. And if the fact is that the attack on this woman supports that she was chosen as a victim because she is Bosnian, then it will be. You want to call it hate or bias, whatever, it will be. It has the capacity to be prosecuted that way. And in the end, that's what we'd like to see happen, if the facts bear it out.
I know you and your organization have been active on this front for a long, long time. What do you make of this most recent incident?
I'm very concerned, and we're looking not only at this incident, but at the death of Mr. Begich the week before. We're looking at a terrible incident against a 15-year-old Somali in the Kansas City area who was run over and subsequently died of his injuries. And the question in that case will be whether or not the intent was anti-Muslim or whether there was another motivation. And then there's another incident in the Kansas City area that happened on the morning of Halloween, where an African-American man was killed. But the question may be actually that he was killed because he was gay. And so what is necessary is an awful lot of investigation, an awful lot of looking at witness statements, doing things online, trying to get a sense of that person's role in the community, and any other factors that you can come up with that would say that these things happen because people were chosen as victims because of their connection to a particular group.
Imam Hasic, two of the incidents that Karen referred to were in your community, the Bosnian community. Your thoughts about what is happening and what might be going on?
Community is in a shock after these things happening, upset. It's on a nerve. And obviously this second case, like, it looks like it's targeted, as it seems like characteristics of the hate crime. Of the first case, we don't know still, like, exactly facts.
That's the hammer death.
Right,
yes.
And should we proceed like according to the facts? And especially our community, many members are here. They are survival. They survived the genocide and the war and all these horrible things what is happening. And they find a place to call it a home and feel secure for many years. They build a neighborhood and so on, you know. And now it's really like a shock for all of us.
Do you have any sense, or members of your community have any sense, as to what might be behind this sudden outburst?
It's really hard, like, you know, to judge, like, completely, like, what is it. But it seems like in recent events and many months in St. Louis, like, is producing the tensions, like, and spilling all over the city.
There's a tension, a community-wide tension, for any number of reasons. I guess anybody has the potential to be caught up on it. And A.J., I'm sure this is something that you give a lot of thought to.
Well, I think that one of the most common calls that we get is that people will indicate they believe they've been subject to a hate crime. And there's a difference between hate crime and hate language, hate speech. When someone necessarily just calls someone, you know, an epithet, it's not necessarily directly a hate crime. People, unfortunately, are still able to use epithets under the freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. And so that's not punishable. But then if it's those epithets are also said during the act of a crime against an individual, an attack, then it escalates to a hate crime. Mm-hmm. And that's a significant difference. We've been blessed that we haven't seen major incidents in the recent past in St. Louis. We had an incident a couple of years ago. With a few people leaving a bar, because there had been some indication it had been across the river that someone had come across. It was an Illinois license plate that had been identified. So the FBI also got involved And across the board, the St. Louis Police, the FBI, the U.S. Attorney's Task Force on Hate Crimes was very active in making sure all of that got vetted and reviewed considerably. Unfortunately, no one was identified as the attacker in that case.
Yeah. Go ahead, Karen.
No, I was going to say the conversation this week is timely because the federal government released through the FBI the annual statistics, which come out a year late. So we're looking at the 2013 statistics, which were reported this week. And while it's positive that the number of law enforcement jurisdictions that are reporting is on the increase, all the areas where people have been targeted is decreased. But we still look at race as the area where the highest number of hate-based incidents occurs.
Isn't it difficult to really pin, in most cases, pin down a hate crime? AJ has alluded to the language that's being used. Certain things have to happen for it to be categorized that way.
They do, but I think that's why the misunderstanding is that hate crime happens all the time and that hate crime prosecutions are happening all the time. That's not the case.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and they really are few and far between. The two in the last decade that have been the most teachable moments in this area have been the killings of James Byrd and Matthew Shepard, which resulted in the federal legislation that was passed
in
2009.
But they were not here. They were not here.
They were in Wyoming and they were in Texas, right. But they were such stark examples of why those two, as a gay man and as a black man, were chosen as specific victims. In the case of the young lady who was attacked this week, if the specific things that were said along the lines of "we're going to get you, you're Bosnian," things like that will lend itself really well to intent because that's what you're really looking at.
And it's incumbent upon the officer investigating that case to make sure that that remark is put down in his notebook and passed along.
And that's one of the things about hate crime training for police that has changed over the years. In other words, how reports are written, how witnesses are investigated. In the case, for instance, of this young man in Kansas City who was killed at Halloween, if the initial discussion was this could just be a murder that's kind of random and just sort of random violence that could be economically based, it may turn out that somebody he knew within his circle who either was an acquaintance through the gay community or was somebody who thought he wasn't gay, found out he was gay. I mean, and in order to do that, you're looking through phone records and computer hard drives and you're doing some serious investigative work to try and get at the bottom of what really happened.
AJ, I want to go back to the language that is being used that you've referred to. Seems to me that's an obvious red flag when you start hearing things such as, you know, you've been talking about. You have to suspect that there could be a next step, and that could be violent.
There could be a next step, and I think there's two things to illustrate when it comes to language. We have a very polarized situation, not just in our own region at this time, but around the country. From the LGBT perspective, you recently had a pastor in Arizona indicate that it should be okay to kill gays. That's a horrendous statement. He's still protected, though, in saying that under his free speech rights. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't consequences for that. And some of those consequences include motivating some people that perhaps are not as stable to actually take action on those words. I think one of the things, though, that's especially around language and how this is framed, something that's relevant for our region is the aspect of the knockout game that we've seen over the last several years. It's popped up in the media at different
points. Some were, some weren't.
Yeah. Right. Where in some cases, for example, the knockout game primarily we've seen is a crime of opportunity because you'll have a group of young people seeking to target someone, and they'll target the perceived weakest person in a group or someone that they can easily overwhelm. So in some cases, it's been it was a Korean man, I believe, that was targeted and killed at one point. Mm-hmm. In another case, there was a young gay man getting off the Metrolink near the Galleria, who had been targeted. In one case, it clearly seems to have been crime of opportunity. In another, because epithets has been yelled at the young man, there was a question of does this escalate then to a hate crime?
And I think in the case of this young Bosnian woman, one of the issues was that there was an economic opportunity, but that they didn't take advantage of it. And that's – look, if I steal your wallet, my motive is the money. And I get compliance from you if I bully you or harass you. I get compliance when I get your wallet. If I'm smart, I take the money, drop the wallet, I run. If I hate you because I don't like your color or your ethnic background or your sexual orientation or your religion, and I start attacking you, when do I get compliance? you're not going to give me anything that's going to satisfy me other than severe violence or potentially death. And that's why the murder of Mr. Begich, in my mind, is questionable. I don't have all the facts. I'm waiting to hear what the investigation comes out with. But that's very unique to the nature of hate violence.
And these crimes in your community, Imam, there's not a lot of crime reported. I may be wrong in this, but there's not a lot of crime reported from your community.
Not really, like, and I don't know, there is maybe some small assault or so on, you know, something's happening. And so many people probably they don't want to come, like, publicly and for some issues, like, to complain. And they know that will be some time wasting of time and the money, too. Like, you know, it will not be really, like, give you some results or so.
What are you hearing from members of your community with regard to what they can do, what they might do to protect themselves if they feel that there is a threat out there? Do they feel that there is any measures that they can take to walk in groups or do things like that?
I have the sense of the feeling like, you know, people are really concerned and they are more vigilant, really like watching around and trying to help each other and to go probably a little bit more in a group. I know some ladies, they go to work, and four of them, they go together, and 1 week, one is driving with her car, second week, and so on, you know. So that's the...
And that's really sad, because that's one of the impacts of hate violence on a community. It's not just the individual. The entire community is affected. And to the extent that people feel insecure in any way, that's a shame.
And it limits your ability also of movement. Like, you know, if you really have to go, like, four of you together to work, like, you got to plan all other things according to it.
And, AJ, it's not like the people who are out there who could be violent are wearing a uniform or anything that distinguishes them from anybody else. There's no way of telling until something happens.
Correct. You don't necessarily know what you're – encountering necessarily what is going to set someone off at times as well. So it's very difficult to necessarily discern.
What about this day of social media? Is that being, Karen, I'll start with you on this. Is that working its way into this whole equation?
I think eventually we'll get to the point where the First Amendment notwithstanding, certain things that are said in texting or in tweeting or on Facebook will hold people accountable. There's a current Supreme Court case that is being heard that addresses this issue, whether or not you can make certain threats and still be protected behind the First Amendment from what may not necessarily be hate-based but could be considered criminal even in light of the First Amendment.
And yet there's a lot of material on the Internet that, you know, I mean, it's just loaded with hate, with skinheads and, you know, anti-Semitism, the whole ball of it. And nothing is being done about that.
Well, the question is how you draw legal lines that are appropriate under current standards to hold people accountable for things they might incite others to do. I would like to say, and I know we sort of have endless conversations sometimes that end really well and sometimes not so much, about the impact of Ferguson right now. But the level, as you said, of tension and conflict in the community right now, whether it's between whites and blacks, whether it's about religion, whether it's about orientation, I think there's such a high level of, gee, I'm right in my life, therefore you must be wrong. I haven't done anything to affect this. I've been a good person. It's somebody else's fault. It's a ripe atmosphere for these things to start happening, and that's one of my greatest concerns, which is can we just simply figure out how to kind of take our bias, which we always have, hold it in check, and find a way to outreach into the community, support the Bosnian community, support the gay community, figure out how to reach out and make friends and get to know people. The bias is a whole lot less, and the risk of hate crime goes way down.
AJ, do you feel that the time is ripe for this type of activity, given what Karen just said about the tension in our community?
I think tensions are incredibly high right now. Mm-hmm. And again, I would say it's not just the St. Louis region. We're seeing these kinds of things across the country, that there's a polarization at a number of different levels. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed emerge along the South Grand Corridor in talking with different community members, business owners, is that right now the conversation and the dialogue is about race, and specifically black, white interactions here in the St. Louis region. But when you go along the South Grand Corridor, you have a number of different populations that are established in our city. We seek through the Mosaic Project to bring in a higher percentage of immigrants through our region. Yet, when you talk to the immigrant populations, they're saying, we still have bias based upon my Asian background, based upon my Somali background, and they're being targeted in different ways. They're not necessarily allowed in shops, and those people are not necessarily as attuned to the systems and infrastructure that we have set up to help dismantle those issues, that they do have the protections that they should be able to shop in any shop along Grand.
Yeah. Imam, your thoughts about that?
I believe like people should have more communication, especially in the neighborhood, in the schools, and many things in a broader issue as improving like education for very young children, and they start to the school how to respect the others, how to behave in the public places. And because many things in the public places, we can say like 95-97% it's universal for all of us. Your religion or your race, like it's basically like 3% of your life in the privacy of your house or mosque or churches or synagogues or so on, you know. So definitely we can support each other more and build a more safer neighborhood if everybody involved his time and effort.
How long would you think it would take, Imam Hasic, for people to become adjusted to, quote, our way of life, coming to a new community, a new country, and adjusting to our culture here and those stereotypes that we're all so familiar with?
It depends of every individual, like how fast you're learning the language, how fast you find the jobs according to your skills and so on, you know. And once time when you learn the language, you communicate a little bit better and so on, you adjust definitely faster. I think so most of people adjust pretty well in a matter of few years, like 2-3, some of them 5 or so.
Karen, looking back at our history, I mean, there have always been waves of immigrants that have come in over the last centuries. Is this sort of crime something that has happened a lot in our past?
Oh, it has. I just think the conversation about it has been much more elevated. Mm-hmm. I think people are much more aware. I think folks generally condemn the kind of hate-based activity we've seen over the past couple mm-hmm. of weeks. And it makes people in the mainstream, whatever their background, very concerned, and they should be, which is why there needs to be community responsibility to come together. We are as John Kennedy said, we are a nation of immigrants, mm-hmm. and we can't ever forget that. Sometimes we do. And we get into our comfort zones and we find our own little environments and they're safe and secure and we don't step out of them. If we stepped out of them more, maybe we'd find a whole lot of new friends.
What about prosecuting these cases? Is that are they slam dunks if you've got the
No.
necessary ingredients?
They're very difficult because you really do have to have a really substantial police investigation in order to go forward. And sometimes prosecutors, not so much in the urban core, but in some of the smaller communities where they find very conservative juries, prosecutors kind of back off. And since a hate crime is already a crime, right, mm-hmm. the prosecutor could very easily say, well, let me just prosecute the underlying crime. I know I can do the assault. Let me do that, and I'll get that, because prosecutors like to win cases rather than go to have to discuss with a jury that may not be familiar with a particular immigrant group or may not be well disposed to people who are different than they. And so a lot of times there's a default which backs away from a hate crime prosecution. That's the very large number of them are actually very small.
That's what I thought. And the punishment? Is it different?
The punishments are different. Most of the statutes in the United States are what are called enhanced statutes. So they take the criminal liability for that crime and they kick it up a notch. So at sentencing, a judge may take into consideration all of the bias and hate-based aspects that caused the crime in the first place. Mm. And as with Matthew Shepard and James Byrd, it was painfully obvious why those happened. In others, it's going to be more gray.
AJ, go ahead, Imam.
Prosecution and punishment also could help the community, like, to heal the faster and also to keep, like, safer. So they will be feeling there is a system that is working to protect them and make them safer later on.
That's a good point. Those prosecutors who've been very assertive around hate crime really do have a sense publicly that they are seeking to protect all of the community.
And we've all seen recently what happens when the process is slow and people have a chance to kind of simmer and let the situation fester. AJ, what is Promo doing with regard to letting people know what's going on out there and, you know, how they can deal with it, that sort of thing?
Well, in our case, we have a number of community partners. So, for example, if we receive phone calls and there is indication that this could be something bias motivated, my first interaction is usually to call Karen Oresti, because as the U.S. Attorney's Task Force on Hate Crimes co-chair, she really has developed relationships with prosecutors and that can help identify and push for something to be identified as a hate crime, and knows exactly how to go about doing that. In the Kansas City region, the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project is also a great coalition partner that we just connected Karen with in that situation over in KC with the young man,
Deontay Green,
who we believe may have been murdered based on the fact he's gay. There's a number of different things, and so we generally get the calls about discrimination, and we try to then identify what level, you know, what are the actions possible. And if there is something assault-based, our first call is to a group that can deal with assault.
And Imam Hasish, what can you and yours do, do you think, to help allay some of the fears in your community? We only have about 30 seconds left.
And my duty is just to tell the people to be more vigilant, supportive of each other. And at this time, I also would like to thank all of those individuals and group who expressed their support for the Bosnian community at this difficult time.
All right. And Karen, a final word. What do you want to leave our audience with?
Friday morning is the quarterly meeting of the U.S. Attorney's Hate Crimes Task Force, which has been ongoing and strong for almost 15 years now. It's got about 70 different representatives, and we'll be talking about these issues this week and figuring out how we can help the community.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all, Karen Oresti, for being with us, and Imam Hasish, thank you for being with us. A.J. Bachman, thank you for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the increase in the murder rate in the city of St. Louis this year. Then we'll take a look at a new book exploring the 95-year history of Famous Bar. Do you have a favorite memory about this St. Louis institution and landmark? Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.